Members, the House E-12 Education Committee of the Minnesota 85th Legislative Session will come to order. I've been practicing that for about a week now.
Yeah, you did very well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for being here early. I was sharing with Representative Dietrich about the 8 o'clock that anyone who knows me knows that the speaker is pulling a prank. Because asking me to chair a meeting, or even to come to a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning, is payback for something, I'm sure. And this is from a member who can see the Capitol from his house, so it has nothing to do with distance or traffic. But thank you for being here bright and early. I'm sure that most of our other colleagues will be filtering in shortly. Thank you all in the audience for coming also this early. What I want to do today is actually a pretty simple agenda, and I suspect that we'll be done before our allotted time, and that's good. But I also want to make sure that we have a really good substantive discussion. Many of you are also serve on Representative Greiling's committee, and yesterday we had our first meeting, and we had a lengthy introduction period, but I think it was very valuable, time well spent. I think it's really important that we all get to know each other, both as individuals, but also in terms of the issues that motivate us, particularly in this area in education. I really view this committee in many ways as one of the places in which legislators will have ample time, hopefully ample time, to be able to go through the full range of education policy issues that face our schools, our students, and communities. But also can spend time exploring cutting-edge education policy issues. And there are many out there. Our society is changing rapidly. The expectations on our schools and on our students and our population are changing accordingly. And I think it's incumbent on us as the policymakers in Minnesota to try to stay on top of that issue. And a lot of that isn't so much about proving who's right or wrong, in my mind, on these issues, as much as it is about having honest, exploratory debates and discussions on these emerging policy issues. So with that backdrop, I've formatted this meeting in a way where we spend really the bulk of it having a discussion with one another. And I hope you got my email, which I sent out at, midnight, I think, a couple of days ago. As a way to prepare you to think about how to spend your time here. We have about an hour and a half in this committee time, and then I guess we're off the session right after this. Is that correct? But I think we'll be fine. Before we do the discussion part, I just want to do a few housekeeping kind of things. In your packet, you'll find your folders. You'll find some pieces of information. One of the things that we did is we drafted up a flow chart of education committee members that serve in the five different education committees. We have a new structure here in the House. We haven't figured out 100% yet how it's going to work, but we are going to make it work. We're very excited about the new structure. We think it's going to provide a great opportunity for large numbers of legislators to weigh in on one of the most important things that we do in this state, which is to provide for education for our young. But I thought that providing the flow chart here would help you to figure out the members who are not on this committee, but who do have responsibilities for education, appropriations, and policy as a way to further your ability to coordinate with one another. So that's in your packet. There's also a real handy photo guide, which I'll be using quite a bit, folks. I'm not a great politician. I should never have been in this business. You know, faces and names are things that I don't do very well, unfortunately. I also drafted some committee procedures for you. Most of them are pretty standard. As part of doing that, I set up some goals for us. And, of course, the first goal is for us to, in fact, be the place where we can have cutting-edge E-12 education policy discussions in the state. But the other goals really have to do with following good etiquette with strong expectations of our members in that regard, but also strong expectations of the public in that regard. It is an early morning meeting, and I think we still have something like a rule in the House that says there's absolutely no food and drink in any of our committee rooms. Yes, Mr. Kelly, he's hiding his coffee. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm not exactly a rule follower. At 8 o'clock in the morning, we got to have coffee and at least a donut. So feel free, right on, feel free to do that. The chair will be providing goodies every once in a while, and anyone else who wants to volunteer to do that, please do so. Obviously, I've been here long enough that I remember some of the older members back in the 90s complaining about longer than Mindy's been teaching. Some of the older members complaining or sharing that the public had tremendous complaints about the behavior of the legislature in regards to food. I think Representative Murphy, you probably recall that. I used to come and testify in the 80s here. And it really had gotten out of hand. I mean, you had McDonald's bags on top of the tables. You could smell onions in the room, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience for the public. And so I would only ask that you proceed with discretion in terms of, please don't bring McDonald's either. What's that?
Oh, White Castle.
White Castle, right up the street. Right up the street. So what I'd like to do is, because we're going to have this substantive discussion, I hope, is really start out by introducing our staff, and so you get to know who they are, and then we'll get into our discussion. And, you know, Representative Dietrich, I'm going to have you start us off when we get to that point, so just a heads up, and then Representative Erickson is our lead GOP member. I'll have you go second, if that's okay, and then we'll done that way through Representative Abler. But let me introduce our staff to my left here, Celeste Marin. Celeste is our committee legislative assistant. She's fluent in Spanish, so you can test her out. We have nice conversations in Spanish when we don't want people to know what we're talking about. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are.
My name is Celeste Marin. I just started about a week ago, so be patient. I'm very excited to be on this committee. I'm very excited to work with all of you, and I think that this is just an amazing opportunity. Please come to me if you have any questions. I'm always available, and if I don't know the answer, I will find it for you. So, thank you.
And please do take our staff up on that. I know that Representative Grayling had also offered that in committee. It's really important that you be as fully informed of what's going on and have access to information, and our staff is here to provide that. To my right, Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina Gossick, committee administrator. Previously, I was in the DFL media office, and I hope that I can be a resource to all members of the committee.
Terrific. And I'm going to jump over you, Representative Dietrich, and ask Ms. Larson to introduce herself.
Hello, I'm Lisa Larson. I work for House Research. I serve as this committee's counsel, and I have been a legislative analyst since 1981.
I broke one of our best staffers here in the House, and I certainly have had the pleasure of working with Lisa for a number of years. Tremendously helpful, tremendously knowledgeable. So please do avail yourself of her knowledge. We have our House, or our DFL and GOP research folks here, so why don't you introduce yourselves. Brad?
Good morning. My name is Brad Kelly, and I'm a researcher for the DFL. I've been with the House for 4 years. Previously, I served the State Government Finance, GovOps, Civil Law Elections, and Pensions, so I'm happy to be here, and I hope to be of assistance.
And he's severely underworked, as you can tell by that coverage of committees, so DFL members certainly bug him. Carmen?
I'm Carmen Carter, and I'm the GOP research. I'm Brad's counterpart. In the last 2 years, I was actually Mark Biskin's CLA for this committee.
And it's good to have you back, Carmen. I had the privilege of working with you for the past couple of years as well. Wonder if our pages could introduce themselves. Just come on up here, too. I think we're being taped. I'm not sure. Come on up here to the mic. Tell us who you are and a little bit about yourselves.
Hi, I'm Maggie Shea. I'm from Owatonna, and I'm really excited to be here. So.
Terrific. Great community, Owatonna.
I'm Arlen Rested. I work with the Sergeant's Office as a page and also a guard up in the chamber, and I've been here 6 years. I live out at Eagan, Minnesota. I believe we're assigned temporary yet this week, so you will have permanent pages probably starting next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other staff that I'm missing? Okay. Why don't we get into our agenda then for the day, and then at the end, hopefully there'll be some time, I'll share with you what we've got in store for you in the coming week. So Representative Dietrich, I'm going to ask you to get us started. And don't be terribly brief. I mean, I think the important, I mean, don't take all the time, but I think the important thing is to really, share substantive information with your colleagues about your policy areas of concern and interest.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. I am a representative, Denise Dietrich. I represent District 47A, which is all of Champlin and a portion of Coon Rapids. It's an area northwest of the cities here. And I am very fortunate in this situation because I represent only one school district. But you will hear me say very often, it is the Anoka-Hennepin School District, and it is the largest school district in the state. And I know Representative Greiling is already tired of me saying that. But it is. For many years, it tailed right behind Minneapolis and St. Paul, but I think it was about 4 years ago, it went ahead, and it is now those two school districts, and it is now the largest school district in the state. So we are characterized by the largest school district in the state, and I feel like we are also characterized by some of the largest high schools and middle schools and elementary schools in the state also. Our schools, we have four high schools that are about 3,000 students. Wow. The school that my children attend or will attend is over 3,200 students. At the high school level, at the middle school level, it is 2,100 students, and at the elementary school, it was 1,000 students. So I am going to continue to focus on that and see what types of issues does that bring forth and what types of concerns, because it is a concern for me. So there are some other things that I would like to tell you about the school district itself. We have experienced many years of budget cutting, and that is one of the reasons that I am here. I got involved in that process as a parent, and have then as a school board member for 7 years, and then came here. And as a result of those budget cuts, I just want to share some of them with you, because I'm sure your school district are either experiencing them or will experience them in the near future if we don't do something about the condition of our schools. We have all day, every other day, kindergarten, and we went to that as a to reduce transportation costs. We have probably the highest co-curricular fees in the state. We have a two-mile transportation policy at every age level, elementary, middle, and high school. It is 2 miles. And if you're fortunate enough, your parent, if you live between 1 and 2 miles, you can pay $180 for one student to buy one seat on a bus. And as you can tell, if you have two or three students and you do that over a period of 5 years at the elementary school, that can get very frustrating as a parent. You feel like you have a special tax that nobody else has. So those are just some of the ways that funding has affected our schools. On the other hand, we have a very proud educational community in our district. The parents have taken on the issue of education funding and are very educated, and we have been for over 10 years. In fact, as I mentioned before, that's how I became involved, and that's why I am here. So I became involved as a parent. first of all. The other thing that I want to mention about our school district is that we finally have become very dependent on our levy in order to fund basics in our district. And so this year we will be renewing that levy, hopefully, and it is really important that we are able to go out to the voters and renew that levy. If we can't, that would be a major crisis in our school district. So that is something else that I will be keeping in the back of my mind as we proceed with policy and finance in the next couple of months. On a statewide level, what are some of my concerns? Number one is the achievement gap. And I've done quite a bit of research, reading, listening in regards to the achievement gap. I am really ready to move forward to solutions. And whether it be more, I don't think there is any one solution. I think that it has to be a full package of solutions that fits the needs of all districts throughout the state. And whether it be more career counselors, strengthening math and science, changing the school year, changing the look of the school day, I am very open to many solutions that we can all take a look at, and I'm very excited about that. And I know that that Representative Mariani is very astute in that area, and I know that he is going to lead us to a path of some solutions. The other thing that I have a concern about is, are we preparing our students for the 21st century, and how do we do that? And it is my hope that we can look at some policy issues that would help strengthen our students' educational experience so that they are competitive and ready to compete in a global economy, because I think that is what they will be dealing with. The other thing is, I am very interested in the area of high-quality early education, and I want to make sure that I always try to add those two adjectives before when I talk about early education. I think high quality is so important, and one important piece to that for me personally is the parental piece, and that is what I would really like to focus on. I think we have to touch the parents of the early education students that we start providing extra services for. But I think that provides much hope for our state as to closing the achievement gap and supporting our earliest learners. So with that, I think I will close. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. And I suspect that, and I know that this happened yesterday, Representative Grayling, that a number of us are probably learning that we have a lot of commonalities in terms of challenges that our schools are faced with, but also commonalities in terms of how we're beginning to review our work in this state in terms of education. So please don't hesitate, just because it's been said, to repeat those in terms of your concerns or sharing your district's information. Representative Erickson, I've had the privilege of working with you on this committee for at least 4 years, yes. And it's good to have you and
Thank
see you here this year and your next.
Thank you. I'm Sandra Erickson, the Republican lead on policy. I was late because I was at the breakfast for Christian schools and listening to the concerns that they have when it comes to school choice and tax credits. So I know that'll be one of our debates this session too. I'm a retired high school English teacher from Princeton in Cambridge, and taught just about any time of the day that students might need some help. I taught in the alternative school, I taught after school, summer school, and I think most of you know students are first in my agenda. And so I have some questions to pose to us today as we talk about Representative Mariani's goal, which is a marvelous, marvelous goal for us to tackle this session, closing the achievement gap. What does the hard data say about the size and persistence of achievement gaps among various demographic groups? I hope we'll look at that. Mm-hmm. What steps have been taken to reduce those gaps and to improve education, especially in Minneapolis-St. Paul, but in any area in our state where we have achievement gaps? What does first-rate research say about the benefits of educational competition in general and school choice in particular in both private and public school students? And then we want to remember, as Representative Dietrich said, that we want to engage our parents. Parents deserve the best possible place to send their children, and we want to enable them to have that possibility. And then, of course, we want to argue, I hope, very rigorously, the benefits of school choice. And so I look forward to closing the achievement gap, at least at the beginning stage, among this group.
Thank you. Representative Abler.
Hi, I'm Jim Abler. I'm from Minocqua, which I think is Minnesota's largest school district. I think. And I won't need to go much down the... Yeah, you maybe haven't heard that anywhere
tell
before.
Us more.
It's a wonderful district. Let me tell you all about it. You've already heard about it. So I'll be a little more global. Denise and I are good neighbors across the river there. So many of the same things that affect our district affect statewide, which is where I'd like to put my focus this time. Carlos and I had to sit down, but we were going to talk about the disparities, which I think are just really a bad thing. When half of certain segments of our state are not graduating from high school, they never get to college, and they never get to become the leaders that need to bubble up and create the role models and all that. And I just think that I think we can dig in this year and get something done, and I'm really looking forward to that. And I think there's a lot of things we can do for free, since there is no real money if you don't sit on Ways and Means or haven't read the forecast. There's $1.1 billion in structural surplus, but it's $1.2 billion to pay inflation. So I think that, as the majority now realizes how to budget all this stuff, it's easier to be in the minority and say, oh, we should do more. That's my job now. We should do more. We want a bigger formula increase, Representative Greiling. We need to really go after that formula. You know, they'll be there. Anyway, but I think we'll be good sports about all this. But I think that in this committee, we can be creative and get out of the way of innovation and ask statewide, what have you done that works? And let's allow that more. And maybe in the compensatory funding area, we can release some of the uses of that money to be a little flexible. I know our district, the largest one in Minnesota, I've heard, has had some pilots going underway, which we might want to hear how it's going in some of these at-risk groups. Denise mentioned it, but referendums are a way of life, and we've kind of moved there, and to move away from that is going to take a period of time again. But in the meantime, they have to allow districts to pass their levies, and equalization continues to be a challenge. The Minnesota Miracles kind of ran out because of inflation not being put into those formulas, and we all know that. We've been in this educated policy or the finance committee for very long. And then the equity issues continue, especially in some of the rural schools, and that concerns me as well. You shouldn't be punished because you happen to live in a place with nicer lakes. And also, so that's what I hope to look after is what can we do for free? How can we get out of the way of innovators? Maybe the chair will be putting out a call for good ideas that work up in Bowabic or in whatever corner of the state that maybe we should hear about that have been kind of unsung successes. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. And it is my hope that, we're obviously sitting in St. Paul, and it's a big state, but it is my hope that both through you but also through direct conversations, where possible, that we're able to hear a full story of E-12 education in the state. So thank you for that reminder. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Randy Demmer. District 29A is where I'm from, which is all of Dodge. I live in Hayfield, and I represent all of Dodge County, Western and Northern Olmsted County. I'm a product of Hayfield in a community school down there, public school. Graduated with 125 members in my class, which was the largest class ever from Hayfield still. It's varied in sizes. I think we have some grades now in the 50s in the elementaries, and my daughter's going to graduate this year, and I think they have 90-some. So great changes in the Hayfield School District. The area I'm from is largely agricultural, but I cover a wide spectrum of probably the type of schools that we have in the state of Minnesota. Hayfield and Triton. Triton is a consolidated school district consisting of kids from Dodge Center, Claremont, West Concord. And that school has been consolidated in my lifetime, probably in the last 10, 15 years. When I was in school, I got to play against the West Concord Cardinals and the Dodge Center Dodgers, and I did not get to compete against the Claremont Parrots, but they were there in my lifetime. I remember them. Now they are all combined into the Triton Cobras and have an excellent football team, I might add, if you don't remember what they did in the playoffs. And then I have the Castle-Matterville School District, which is going toward Rochester now down Highway 14, and the Byron School District. And both of those schools, Hayfield and Triton, are Hayfield is south and west of Rochester and gets a glow from Rochester. We have a lot of folks working over there. Probably a stable to slightly declining school district at this point. Open enrollment, a little bit minus. We used to be a little bit plus. Kind of depends. We're between Austin and Rochester, so we get some pull those two directions. Triton in Dodge Center and then Castle, Manorville, and Byron are in 14. And the distance from Rochester dictates how that school district is doing. Dodge Center being a little farther away and Triton, that district being a little farther away. More like Hayfield, probably a little bit more stable, slightly declining, but pretty stable now, I believe. Castle, Manorville is a growing school district, struggling with room and looking at doing some sort of a bond referendum for a school. It's failed a couple times. I'm probably looking at trying to do it again because they are growing and bursting at the seams. The Byron School District, to give you a clue, Hayfield Schools, about 875 to 900 kids K-12. Triton Schools, probably about 1,000 to 1,100 K-12. Castle-Manorville, a little larger than that. I don't remember the exact numbers. I'm going to guess 1,500, 2,000 K-12, Mr. Chair, and maybe Byron Schools a little bigger than that, 2,500, and growing rapidly. Byron School District is growing rapidly. I could just mention I have a brand new elementary school probably in the last 10 years, a brand new high school as of this last fall, and have turned their old high school into a middle school. So growing rapidly, and the community is growing rapidly. I also represent a good share of the Rochester School District, which is a very stable school district, growing, I guess it would be a safe thing to say, very diverse, many different school buildings. To me, in my growing up, and I was on the Hayfield School Board for 11 years, to me, a school district was the school. That's what I always grew up thinking. That's my school district. That's my school right there. Well, I now understand that a school district is different from the schools that make up the district. And, of course, Rochester is a good example of that. Very diverse. I understand we're going to get a chance to hear from Superintendent Williams, very creative and very innovative superintendent, which I've learned a great deal from. So I represent those folks over there. A lot of diversity in that school, obviously. A lot of challenges, as we talked about, achievement gap. And then I represent also parts of about four other school districts, which are rural Pine Island, even a little bit of Elgin Millville, Pine Island, and Blooming Prairie. And so that's the nature of the schools that I represent. I think what's important to the school districts for me, and one of the challenges I think we have as a state, is looking at all the different types of schools that we have and trying to craft and trying to come up with an education system that meets the needs of everything from the, I think Anoka is the largest school district, is that right? Yeah, I think I've heard that before.
Members, I believe by the end of the session they'll be firmly ingrained in our collective consciousness.
Well, I'm gonna go back to the order of the questions, Mr. Chair, that you had on the thing, and then I'll get back to that. I think issues that we need to address as a state overall in the global perspective is, number one, just plain excellence. We need world-class education experiences for our kids so they're able to compete in a world environment. We know that our kids are not competing just with South Dakota and Wisconsin and Mississippi and California and Delaware kids. They're competing with kids all over the world for opportunities for growth and for innovation and for jobs, ultimately, and a good style of living. So we need to make sure that we are, above all things, offering excellent opportunities for our kids to grow in this world economy. Within that global overall, and I think nobody would disagree with that, we might disagree how to get there at times, but I think we have to keep that as overall objective. Within that framework, members, the achievement gap, we all talked about that, it's very real. It's very real in the urban schools, it's very real, of course we know that, it's very real in the regional centers such as Rochester, and I believe also in our rural schools. I have to tell you that the schools that I represent, by and large, have 90-95% graduation rates, do well in whatever pursuit they have, especially if they go into higher ed and that sort of thing. And I have my theories as to why our medium-sized schools, and that's what I'm calling Triton, Hayfield, Dodge Center, Castle, Manville, Byron, medium-sized schools. I guess compared to Anoka, they'd be considered small schools. But when you consider the Southwest Minnesota, Western Minnesota, Northern Minnesota, they'd be considered medium-sized schools. And when you have two- and three-section schools. Do very, very well. We have, 95-plus graduation rates. I can remember the handful of kids that didn't graduate, and we all knew about those. And it was just not an expectation that you not do well. So I think the achievement gap members is something we have to continually look at and involve in the Early Childhood Caucus. I think that's a key to getting that done. And I guess the other thing that I think is probably one of my most important issues to look at as we look at the state as a whole is, again, to be sensitive and to look at the different sizes of school districts we have and the differences in our schools. We come up with lots of different, whether it's funding mechanisms or whether it's ways that we'd like our schools to operate, and we expect it to be the same whether it's Anoka or whether it's Slayton. And there's huge differences in the way our schools operate. There's huge differences in the cultures in their schools, and I think we need to be sensitive to those differences and maybe not think that we have a one solution fits all. And if there's one thing that I've learned in my 4 years here in the House, that there probably aren't two schools that are exactly the same in the state of Minnesota, and we have to keep that in mind as we craft legislation and as we come forward with our initiatives. They affect each other in different ways. I guess the biggest priority for me as I look at my time spent on K-12 finance, K-12 education, or K-12 policy, I guess we'll just say that, in the last 4 years, for me is continuing to find ways to move the bar in terms of excellence. It's always, are we moving forward in terms of student achievement? Is this good for the kids? You learn that. I was on the school board 11 years. I mentioned that. First thing you learn is it good for kids? And we have adults in terms of administrators. We have adults in terms of support staff in our schools. We have adults that are teaching. And sometimes we get kind of mixed up I'm not saying mixed up. I'll say we get our priorities get different in terms of what we're trying to do for our schools. And I think the focus should always be on what's the best for the kids. And that's a nice cliche, and everybody thinks that. But when we get into the individual policies, individual things that we debate about, sometimes I believe it's become acceptable for us to think that it's okay for the kids to get by as long as it's better for the adults. And I think we still need to keep that focus on the reason for the schools is the kids, for their achievement, for their growth, culturally, socially, as well as academically. And if we keep that focus, I think we'll be doing ourselves and our states and our constituents a great favor. So. Thanks for the opportunity to expound, and let me pontificate, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to hearing the rest.
All right. Thank you. Good advice and good challenges. I appreciate it, Representative Deffer. Representative Deffer, we haven't met, but welcome, and I look forward to getting to know you this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Bob Detmer, and I represent two counties, say Washington County and Anoka County. I don't represent any schools in the biggest school district, though. Forest Lake is a pretty good sized school district. I represent the communities of Forest Lake, Centerville, Scandia, Columbus, Lionel, Linwood, and Scandia and Hugo. It's a large, very large area over many miles. Students will ride buses for quite a while getting to school. The school districts that I serve are Forest Lake, Centennial, and White Bear Lake that I represent. And these three districts are pretty similar in terms of size. I know Forest Lake has a larger square mile wise, but the students are pretty similar in their backgrounds. The communities are very similar. And riding to work today, riding down the state capitol today, I heard a message on the radio, and it was dealing with there's a hero in every student. How many have heard that message on the radio? It deals with extracurricular after-school activities. And a little bit about my background. I knew in seventh grade that I wanted to be a teacher. And just because of the teachers that I had growing up in Fairfield, Minnesota, grew up on a dairy farm, and being able to get to after-school activities. And parents had to make a big sacrifice because we lived out in the country on the farm, and getting us... For me, it was great to participate in after-school activities, whether it was football, wrestling, or baseball. It kind of got me out of some of the chores at home. But
smart move.
I knew that I wanted to be an educator. And I'm at the end of my career as an educator. I'm on leave right now, but after 34 years, the rule of 990 has cut to me, and I will be retiring in June. I hope to get back on the 21st of May to finish a couple of weeks of school and retire with the rest of the people that might be retiring. And I know when I was hired at Forest Lake, we had about 60 teachers that were hired in that time frame back in 1973. And I student taught in Walker, Minnesota, a graduate of Bemidji State University. Mm-hmm. And I got the opportunity to student teach K through 12. And I knew right then and there that I wanted to be a secondary teacher. My first day teaching a kindergarten class in Walker, I can remember I had everything all ready. I'm a physical education teacher and an outdoor education teacher. And I had everything ready, all the equipment all ready, and the teacher comes walking in just like a mother hen, with everybody walking right behind her. So they all stood on the line, nice and straight, looking at me. So the teacher introduced me to the class. Now, class, this is Mr. Detmer. He is a student teacher. He's going to conduct your physical education class today. And she started walking out. She turned back. Now, you be nice students now. Okay, she left the room, closed the door, and whoo, they were just all over the place. I knew then and there that I wanted to be a secondary teacher. I came to Forest Lake, got hired. I taught 1 year in the junior high. And I got hired, and then the next day I came in and asked, well, I'd like to see the curriculum. And the principal looked at me and said, well, that's why we hired you. You have to write the curriculum. And so then and there I knew what my job was, to develop curriculum for the schools. Would I do it all over again? Yes. If I was to graduate from Bemidji State University, I would be a teacher all over again for another 34 years. Education is one of the most important careers I think a person can be in. I think the after-school activities that we provide for our students, we've had exchange students from Germany and from Thailand, and they don't have these activities that live with our family. And their school districts and their schools. We have, I think, one of the best education systems in the world. We need to support that. And these after-school activities are so important. As an educator, you get to know these students, these student-athletes, in my case with coaching wrestling and soccer and track, you get to know them on a different level. And there's a lot of heroes in students. And these after-school activities bring that out of them. They know how to deal with diversity, how to deal with toughness and stress, and how to, they become leaders. And I just feel honored to be on this committee. I hope I have some good input. But we need to also engage the parents. My experience is the parent involvement drops off so drastically when they get to the 10th grade. How can we keep parents involved in the education of their students all the way through graduation? And I know, sitting in a lot of the parent-teacher conferences, when they get to the high school level, so for some reason that participation drops off. How can we involve parents in the education all the way through? If we can do that, I know if this is going to be part of this committee, but that will, I think, will better our schools, parent involvement. Just remember, there's a hero in every student. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer, and I'm struck by your personal story of the sort of the calling to teach. And my experience with many of my friends who are teachers is that that's a common theme for many of them, that at some point in their lives that there's this sort of calling forth. Folks talk about it in terms of bureaucrats talk about it in terms of a propensity to teach, and it's something that in many ways is you either have it or you don't. But I do think that we can spend good time looking at policy that really evokes that and incentivizes that and rewards that in our state. It's very important As Representative Demmer shared earlier, it's about the kids, but it's also about the adult professionals who are interacting with those children. It's a very human interaction that we're talking about here. So I think we have to be mindful of quality initiatives that really evoke the best in both students and our instructors. So thank you for that. Representative Gutloff, did I pronounce that right, first of all?
You did. I've been called many worse things, believe me.
Well,
but, yeah, Scott Walt, good Irish name. I was trying to see if everybody's awake this morning. I'm German. New to the committee, new to the House, obviously. I was elected to fill Jim Knobloch's old seat, 15A, St. Cloud Way Park, Rockville, St. Augusta. St. Cloud, obviously, one of our regional centers in the state. And then as you get out to Rockville and St. Augusta, you have those section-sized communities. And so it's a rather interesting dynamic in my district. We have one area just south of St. Cloud State University that has a very high percentage of Somali immigrants. So we have a number of Muslims there. We have a number of Hispanics living in that area, all the way out to what would be considered traditional rural Minnesota. And it is a very interesting district. It's one of the best districts. See, rather than size, I like to look at quality. And so our district, I would say, is the best in the state of Minnesota. That is one of the themes for me. My motivation, if you wanted, it doesn't come from teaching, although I've been around educators my whole life. My family. I have children ranging from preschool to shopping for college. Five kids. And so my commitment to education, my passion for it, is based primarily in my family. I want my kids to achieve. I want them to experience the Minnesota miracle, the Minnesota dream. And I want that for all the kids in our state. We heard at our legislative conference this week how important education is and how important it is that we get it right. And I don't see that as a partisan issue, by the way. I've been a little disappointed in the past that sometimes it's viewed as if one party holds the education banner and the other party doesn't. And I hope that's not the case, as we discussed. I appreciate Chair Mariani's commitment to looking at models and Jim's comments, Jim Abler's comments about getting out of the way of innovation. I think there are a lot of great ideas out there. We need to make room for best practices. But my focus is on excellence and achievement, and I think we have to make that the goal for kids. Excellence and achievement should be the measure of everything that we do. Some specifics, the funding formula for school districts, and I live in one in particular, St. Cloud, in a small corner of the Cold Spring Ricori School District. It's a regional center. We have a lot of special education needs, but the formula does not account for that in our district, and we're falling further and further behind in the area of special education. There's a lot of concern about that equalization and equity. There's concern about the complexity of the funding formula. At one forum during the campaign, I asked an audience if anybody could explain to me the state public education funding formula. And there were superintendents in the audience who barely raised their hand, kind of like, well, if you ask me further, Mr. Gottwald, I don't think I could explain it. It's hard for us to connect with the public and tell them we're spending this money to achieve these things in a transparent way and get them on board more with what we're trying to do without a funding formula that's more transparent, that's more straightforward. I think it needs to be looked at. The focus on excellent outcomes, not only dollars. I realize money is important. Another one of my motivations is that my wife is a homebound tutor. She teaches, helps get kids back into the classroom after they've been out for a variety of reasons, teen pregnancies, cancer treatment, drug problems, family problems, and helps get them back in the classroom at all levels. I have a brother who teaches in an inner-city St. Paul school, 85% poverty level in his classroom. He was recently recognized in the Star and Tribune as being one of those with an excellent outcome in his classroom. His wife is an early childhood learning substitute teacher. So it's a rich environment, a lot of needs. And I think a lot of opportunities, if we're open to it, to look at different ways of delivering excellence and achievement. Parental involvement, I so appreciate hearing that. I another forum I asked people, what's the number one factor contributing to student achievement? And I'd ask the same of this group. It's parental involvement. I don't know how we legislate that, but I think we can look at systems that motivate that, incent that, help build that in. We need parents involved in their kids' education. Best practices in school choice. I'm open to that as well. Again, that's where the achievement and innovation come in. Our school district, 742 in St. Cloud, has looked at the QCOMP program. Is it perfect? No. And another final one, unfunded mandates. No Child Left Behind. A lot of people very frustrated about that. And it strikes me that as we look at these approaches to measuring achievement and trying to focus on excellence and outcomes, we got to do it in a common sense, reasonable way that recognizes the people in the classroom, the teachers, the administrators, the students, the parents, and do it in a common sense way. And if you're going to put something on people, it's going to cost them money. Let's be upfront about that. And let's talk about where that money comes from. So I'm looking very much forward to this. I know I'm going to learn a lot, and hopefully I'll be able to contribute a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I suspect that in your ancestry, it probably was gut vault to be, right?
Yeah. Actually, I was in Germany last fall, and there are actually relatives who spell it the way I do in that part of Germany. So, yeah. It's
good. Thank you for bringing up the NCLB issue. As we all know, Congress will be beginning the reauthorization process for that this year. Whether they'll complete it this year or not is another question, but I think it is incumbent on state legislators to be able to weigh in pretty heavily, because we're the folks who are needing to implement this, and there are certainly issues with that. And I would hope that we have some substantive time looking at how we can impact our congressional delegation in regards to NCLB reauthorization.
Quick tip of the hat to Mindy Grayling, too. She now represents the district I grew up in. I grew up in northeast Minneapolis, near Roseville. So, and Larry Hosh, who's just on my... I'm closer, actually, to downtown St. Joseph than I am to downtown St. Cloud. But good to have you on.
All right. Members, I'm told we have 40 minutes, and we have 20 members to get through. So I leave that to you as we move forward. It's not that I want to cut off the rate. We can certainly stay up till 10 o'clock, too, by the way. I'm game to do that. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you. Like Representative Gottwald over here, I'm Irish. My name was Paul Heidgerken. We shortened it when we came across the border. And with that said, I want to follow up with Representative Murphy's comments yesterday and just giving you a little idea where I came from when it comes to education. The first time I drove I got on the school bus, I drove it. I grew up in a small little rural school district out there and walked to school every day. Never had a school bus. We were a mile from town, so there wasn't any school bus service, so we walked each and every day. I was not familiar with the hot lunch program. We did not have any. We bought these little syrup pails with sandwiches in, and that was our lunch. And one teacher to a grade and about to 35 in the class. But anyways, from there on, I got a new experience. I went over to St. John's and stayed to be a priest for 4 years, and that was a private school. You didn't leave it only on three times a year. Otherwise, you lived there with the rest of the boys, all one big hall with about 200 of us in one little sleeping. It was an experience. But from there, I went and I graduated St. John's, went to St. Cloud State, became a teacher, followed along with the rest of my family. I've got a couple of brothers teaching, and I've got a couple of sisters teaching, and teaching has been very around our dinner table at all times. My first job at teaching was out in Ashby, out in Representative Norris' district. I signed to become a social studies teacher, only to be informed 2 weeks before that I would be teaching instead English. And my first job, I found out that the three previous teachers did not survive the year. So I was told that you'd be teaching 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And that was my first year of teaching. And, oh, by the way, you do a couple of plays as well. And I remember it got to be play time. I said, I should have about 7 weeks. I said, I should be going on this play pretty soon. But I've been walking around this building, and I could not find a stage. Finally, I got a hold of the superintendent and said, I got to do this play. And I ordered the play. Where do I do the play? Oh, there's no problem. Come here. Took me over and brought me over to the gymnasium. So I think about right over there would be a good place for the stage. You need to build it. Yoshi Extreme Lane. And that was my first, time I did any extracurricular. I directed a play. So then I got wrestling, and I'm the wrestling coach. So first night of practice, we got done, and I was showering up, ready to go home. And basketball coach says, "What do you think you're going?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Where do you want to go, north or south?" So he's talking about. He said, "Well, we got to take the kids home." He said, "You take the bus one way, you take the bus the other way." And that was the first time I ever was on a school bus. I drove it. But anyways, that was my experience with wrestling, and I was the head assistant and junior high coach. And since then, I went on and taught for many years. I went over to BBE, Bruton Bell Gitterosa, directed 28 plays, coached wrestling for 28 years. I coached baseball, started girls fast pitch softball, did the forensic program, the speech program, you name it, I pretty much coached at basketball. The only thing I didn't coach is football. But other than that, I think I covered most of the sports, at least in the small schools have. But with that said, I went over to Freeport, bought Charlie's Cafe, my brother's cafe in Lake Wobegon, better known as the Chatterbox Cafe that Garrison Keillor refers to at all times. And some of you have listened to the Prairie Home Companion show where, as you all well know, where the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and the children are all above average. And in my 13 school districts that I represent, the children are all above average. And but anyways, I will talk about the various, in each and every one of the schools, as Representative Demmer had mentioned, has got a distinct flavor. And each and every one of the schools, since the 2001 tax reform bill, has affected them very gravely. What has happened is that we cannot do referendums out in rural Minnesota. Because what we did with the 01 tax reform bill is we took away their tax base. Edina may be able to do a 1% levy, or Representative Dietrich, you may be able to do a levy. We can't do a levy out in Minnewaska because there's no property wealth left. If you're going to do a operating referendum, in 01 we said, well, all farm property tax exempt except for an acre and a half. And oh, by the way, in order to satisfy the suburbs, all these lake cabins and lake homes along Lake Minnewaska, they're also tax exempt. So you're going to pass a referendum, well, you've got about 55% of your total property wealth is gone. The only property wealth you have are the retired people that get these houses in town. Try passing a referendum. They go out and they can't afford it. So that is a problem that we have in a lot of our rural school districts. It doesn't matter if I'm in Uppsala. There they're complaining about they built a brand new school and their property. What happened was their farm property taxes, their farm property values have gone up. And when that happens, the state reneges on what they give in return. So we go on and I go around to all the school districts. I have a school district, Cyrus, that runs a elementary. They farm out the high school kids to Morris. I mean, there's so many little different distinct flavors with each school district that when I speak for one district, I may not be speaking for the other. Each year, or last year, I went to 12 different school district board meetings. I've been to five of them since the election. I sat through 11 audits last year. And each one has got a different turn. It doesn't matter if I go to New London, if I go to Kirkhoven, if I go to Nowros, Albany. I've got five school districts that are in SOD. So it's we've got the Nowros has got they're up to almost 14.5% minority right now. So and we're getting a lot of minority students. They're Somalian, and we have a lot of immigrant laborers. We have a lot of Hispanic laborers coming into the turkey plant over at Nowros, and the dairy farms are all hiring people. That and it's creating. We have the same problems that the inner city has in many ways in the school district. So it's kind of interesting. It depends where I'm at. It's a different flavor. With that, thank you.
I do appreciate it. Thank you. We're down to 33 minutes. Ms. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if we're down to 10 seconds when we get around to us or what.
Actually, I, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually start. I love being chair. You know, you can do these prerogative kind of things. I'm actually going to jump over. And by the way, let me just say, the seating arrangement that I laid out here is really more for my benefit because there's so many new members. And remember what I said about names and faces with me. And so my hope is to be able to keep the seating arrangement at least for a week, and then after that we'll open it up and you guys can sit where you're more comfortable. But I am going to exercise some prerogative here. And so I'm going to jump over here to Representative Benson. Sorry to put you on the spot so quickly, but welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Benson. I represent part of Minnetonka and a number of precincts in Plymouth. And listening to Representative Pittmer's description of his career in education, it's the same image, same experience that I had during those years that I taught. I used to tell my DFL friends that I did missionary work in Edina schools when I was teaching there, and took full credit for the Democratic presidential candidate carrying that city, something I believed would never happen in my lifetime. I still can't quite believe it. Anyway, I represent three school districts. Hopkins is the larger one, or I have more of the Hopkins school district than I do Minnetonka and Wayzata. But all three of these school districts are facing many of the same problems, in spite of the fact that I think many times people who do not live in these west suburbs, sometimes they don't realize, I think, that these decisions that have been made by the state legislature over the year has also impacted in a negative way many of the things that we're struggling with. For example, one of my districts is in statutory deficit presently. That school district is struggling with 35 different foreign languages. We have students in algebra classes now approaching 40. We have students in well over half the classes who stand in the back of the room because there are no desks and no room to put desks in. And so the parents and people who live in my House district are very concerned about education and what is happening to their districts. Many of them moved for good reasons or bad into those districts because they wanted their children to have the best possible education they could get, and the view was that these school districts had been providing that in the past. They're having great difficulty keeping that going. And I think it was probably the major reason I was elected. Having spent my career in education, I'm concerned about that. Well, there are so many issues, and I think that other than concentrating on seeing to it that every child in the state, whether they're in my districts or yours, they have the best opportunity for an education, is my priority. And I told the people in my district when I ran that I was a state representative, not just a representative from 43B in the west suburbs. And I think there are a lot of things that we can do to improve education for every child. And really, that's why I'm here. So I think one of the ways of ingratiating oneself with a chairman of the committee is to speak briefly and to the point. So I'm going to pass the baton on to someone else.
Well done, Representative Benson. You know, and one of the things you raised yesterday, I remember in Representative Grimes' committee, was a concern for the quote-unquote middle of the road student. And yeah, I've heard a number of people around, including the governor, express that similar type of concern. And I think it does speak to the issue of high expectations for all students. And as a democratic society, it's really important for us to be able to not just, you know, focus on the high achieving and on the other end in terms of students struggling, but really be comprehensive. And so I do appreciate you bringing that up yesterday.
I spent half of my career basically teaching a number of advanced placement classes, and they were very enjoyable and a lot of work, by the way, when you're correcting all those essays. I probably could fill this room with the essays I corrected over those 30-some years. But I also taught a number of what we call the regular classes. And towards the end of my career, I asked to be able to teach more of those, not because I was tired of AP, but because I felt that in my school district, at least, many times those kids were kind of just floating along and no one really paid much attention to them. And I found them to be delightful, and they had all kinds of potential. You know, it's one thing to take credit for advanced placement students to do well. But you know what? They would have done well probably without me, because the classrooms during open house parent night, they were full of parents. And I want to support the argument that we need to do things, positive things, to improve parental participation. It is the key. Parents are more important than the teachers, frankly. I think, in moving kids forward. And that's the key that we need to really break open, figure out how to improve that.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Benson. First term, if you were, I'm going to call on you all next. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Robin Brown, and I represent District 27A, which is all of Freeborn County and the southern and western townships in Moore County. I represent five different school districts. Albert Lee is our largest, and then I also represent Alden Conger, Glenville Emmons, Lyle, and also Southland. So the size of my schools vary from a bit under 1,300 to just a few hundred students. I also serve districts that the span is from I look at our Albert Lee School District, who did not pass the referendum that we so badly needed this just recently, to our smaller school district, Lyle, who just built a new school building. And so they're very diverse in their needs. I'm very happy to be involved in this committee and look forward to working on the issues that many of you have spoken about. Early childhood education is so important to each of us to make sure our children are ready for kindergarten and ready to learn those really important subjects, especially reading. I look forward to working with the committee in encouraging different schools to offer a wide variety of the maths and sciences that we've learned are going to be so important in the future to meet the needs of our state for producing students that can work in different technical fields. My district has a large and growing special education population, so of course it's important to me that we fund that appropriately and hold up to some of the promises that we have made to our districts in that area. I'm an art teacher, so the population that I have worked with are a group of students that really need those programs, the electives, to keep them in, so I have a strong appreciation for providing a comprehensive education. But also as an art teacher, sometimes the students that might sign up for my classes, and I do emphasize sometimes, can be those students that I realize really, really are needing the reading and stronger in the maths and sciences. And again, I emphasize not always, but I'm seeing a little bit of that too. So I have a strong appreciation for those core classes as well. In my area too, the achievement gap is something that I'm interested in addressing, and as I listen to each of the speakers to this time, I can find many things that I have in common with both the large school districts and the smaller ones because of the area that I represent, and I look forward to working with each of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swales. You're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Marcia Swales. I represent District 56B, which includes Woodbury and Landfall. I represent actually two school districts. South Washington County Schools, of course, is the largest school district that I represent, but the other one is North St. Paul Maplewood. The Landfall community sends their children to those schools. My career as a teacher has also been one that is rich and filled with wonderful experiences with students. I decided early on that I wanted to be a school teacher in seventh grade when Mrs. Sutterfield stood at the front board and taught us how to diagram sentences. And I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. My students right now would beg to differ, but I thought they were awesome. I am an advanced placement English teacher at Woodbury High School. I have had the opportunity to work with in the advanced placement program now since 1999 and have taught and have been trained both in AP literature and composition and language and composition. So it's really been a joy being able to integrate those programs into our high school. I also have had the opportunity over my career to work with Hmong refugee students. I have worked with at-risk students. I have worked with pregnant and parenting teens. And so I have had a very, very broad range of experiences in education. Woodbury is one of the fastest growing communities in Minnesota. And as a result, we have had huge growing pains in our school district. We will be building, we just passed a building referendum this fall in order to build our third high school in the community, and it will be under construction and ready to open in 2009. We have a thriving Spanish immersion program at Bailey Elementary, which I think is an wonderful model for other schools to look at. We also have a wonderful charter school in our community, the Math and Science Academy. There are as many students on the waiting list to get into the academy as there are students in the student body. These students are doing amazing things. I've met with the parents there several times now for various opportunities that for programs that are going on in the school. And it is, I think, another wonderful model of things happening in education. We also have several very wonderful and thriving private schools, along with many parents who homeschool, and I think that they're doing that very effectively in our community as well. I have had the opportunity to serve for the last 2 years as the state advisor for the Minnesota Association of Honor Societies. And as a result of that, as a National Honor Society advisor, I have traveled around the state and have met with teachers and students in a variety of high school situations. And I can only tell you that every school I go to, whether it's rural, urban, or suburban, there are good things happening in education in those schools. I see dedicated, caring teachers. I see students trying their very best to reach out and grab opportunities that will lead to a bright future. And I do feel that the state of education in Minnesota is very, very strong and very, very good. I do know that there are problems. I know that No Child Left Behind has caused immense stress for a lot of schools and a lot of school districts. But there are a lot of wonderful things that we should be celebrating. The other thing that I've had the opportunity to serve on was the Minnesota Best Practices Network for Teachers in the Fine Arts, and I served on that for 3 years. And it was a group of 50 teachers from around the state who represented the best and the brightest teachers across the state, and it was such an honor to learn from them and to improve my own teaching skills and the things that I was able to take back to the classroom. So that's a little bit of an introduction of who I am. Woodbury is a school district, or South Washington County Schools is a school district that I am very proud to be a part of. I've spent almost my entire career there, and I'm very, very honored to be a part of this committee and look forward to doing some things that will make a difference for quality education in our state.
Thank you, Representative. And I've met your superintendent of the North St. Paul schools, a terrific individual. Had a good chance to work with her on a task force over at the University of Minnesota this last year. You're very fortunate to have her. Representative Slocum, you're next. And then following, we're going to jump over to Representative Wayne.
You know, I don't know what you're doing here. You know, and I'm a teacher, and they told me to keep my back to the wall. Who cares? I'm Linda Slocum. I represent Richfield, East Richfield, and East and Central Bloomington. I think I'm all right. Can you hear me?
We're good then. Put the videos to the TV.
Yeah, that's right. We're doing, Yeah, all our hearings are taped. So.
Okay, East Richfield, East and Central Bloomington. In my district, the issues are we have a large number of immigrants coming in, Latinos primarily, but also Somalis. And the school district, both of them, are trying to figure out how to deal with this influx and how to involve the families and how to educate the kids in an effective way. They're also concerned about how we assess kids. The No Child Left Behind is fraught with assessments that are very one-sided, and I'd like to do some work with possibly doing some changing with that, or because other states have done some pretty remarkable things with the assessments, and I'd like to see that dealt with. I'm a teacher. I teach 7th and 8th graders things they don't want to know. I teach in Minneapolis. Right now I'm teaching geography. Well, right now I'm here, but I was teaching geography and American history, and I teach English also. I've taught some of the poorest kids the metropolitan area has got to offer in one school, that Olson Middle School up on the north side. We kept the kids for 3 years, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, and there were four of us, and we had a principal who let us do whatever we wanted, and it was a beautiful thing. We wrote our own curriculum. We did virtually nothing out of textbook here, read, answer the questions. We did all our own things. When we had the MBST test, my students on my team, now we had them in 3 years, so in 8th grade, our scores rivaled Edina's. We were very proud. And our principal had to buy us dinner. Because we'd break percentages. And we did absolutely everything. But the most important thing we did is we weren't afraid to teach reading. Oh, I teach social studies. I can't teach reading. Yeah, you can. I can teach math. I can teach anything. If you're a teacher, that's what you do. And I think that the flexibility to do that helped us raise scores incredibly. Plus, after 3 years, we gained some trust from the parents, and that's critical. I think our achievement gap is really about, it's really much broader than just at school. It's a socioeconomic gap, and we're not going to solve it completely unless we broaden out this committee and make it worldwide.
Thank you. Representative Lane.
I don't know. Can you hear me here? I'm from Columbia Heights, Fridley area, and I was 10 years on the school board in Columbia Heights, and it's very much becoming urban, Columbia Heights and Fridley area. And the other piece I want to bring into this, getting into my focus, is I also taught reading and gifted and talented in Minneapolis, and then I did a lot of subbing in Minneapolis, and I chose Minneapolis as the area to do that subbing because I wanted to go right into the urban area and see what was happening. So I've been in practically every school in Minneapolis Public Schools. I also have a master's in psychology, and I'm 3 years into a PhD in health psychology. And I mention these because my focus really is on healthy brain development. And I think sometimes we look at statistics that correlate, and key thing when you're doing research is the statistics will tell you what correlates, not what causes something. Mm. So you're always trying to find out and tease what is the actual cause. We talk about parental involvement, but is that an actual cause of good student achievement, or is it correlated, and what is beyond that? I think you get down to many of these things that come right down to healthy brain development from pre-birth on, before the child even hits school, for instance, many of you know that you can learn a language easier when you're a little child. And that about age 14, we say that the language centers close. Well, what's that mean? That's a brain thing. That actually the cognitive structures that say, okay, we have now developed the language or languages we are going to use, we're done. We can wash away these cells. We don't need them anymore. It's a very, very active process in the brain to wash away cells you don't need. It happens from pre-birth all the way on according to what is needed in your life. And if a child is in a very, very stressed environment, even before they are born, the brain will wash away cognitive centers to focus on the back brain, the fight flight, the get ready to survive. And that is what they will develop all the way up preschool. They come into the school, they have not developed the cognitive centers that they need for complex neural, the complex neural networks that they need for complex reading, math, activities, and it's just not there. That doesn't mean that they can't develop it because we have a very plastic brain. You can learn a language after 14, but you'll probably always have an accent. So it makes the job harder, harder for us, harder for them. And why do we set this up? Why do we get to this point? And some children, it just is almost impossible to get beyond it. So then we look at the teachers, we look at the schools, we blame. But the problem is healthy neural development from the beginning. We talk about the achievement gap. We can correlate this to all kinds of things, but it gets down to this kind of issue. We just need to focus on this. Excellence and achievement is our focus. Good schools are our focus. But what is behind all this? If we don't go to the very basics, we will spin our wheels forever, blame each other forever. So this is my focus, as you can tell.
Thank you very much. And we look forward to hearing from Representative Slawik's committee, because I suspect that they'll be digging very deeply into these issues.
Yes, I'm on that too, yes.
Wonderful. We're going to jump over to first termers on this side of the room. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I represent 51B, which happens to be Fridley, Spring Lake Park, Mounds View, and a small portion of Blaine. And I would say that, so everyone gets to know what that is, I'm replacing Connie Bernardi, for those who have been around. The thing that I have in my district is I consider a small metro school, which would be Fridley, a medium size in Spring Lake Park, and a large size in Mounds View. And I think we can come up with different problems that they have that are common, and then some that are unique to their system. I think unfunded mandates would be one of the largest things that the superintendents had told me. Like Fridley's, they suffer from having 40% free and reduced lunches as being their setup, where the state average is around 30%. So it's worse than the state average, but the average in our state is 30%. Think about that. And I think special ed pieces, I don't even know if I have to speak on that at all. I think everyone in this room knows the difficulty with special ed as the needs are growing there. I'm kind of doing this a little bit out of order. I wanted to state some of the difficulties that we're having in our districts first before I said who I was, because when I came out of school, in high school, I was a lot like Representative Detmer and wanted to be a teacher. But what I was told is you don't make any money in teaching. So I decided to flounder around and not really know what to get into. So then I majored in something called political science.
Make a lot of money there.
Yeah. And then someone once told me, well, what are you going to do with that political science degree? So a lot of times the same kind of thing happens. But I've been in education in different systems throughout small schools, like in Elgin Millville, where I got my start as a counselor, Winona State, as I worked in their area. And I work as a counselor in Roseville. And I like to echo Representative Lane with the whole child. That's what we need to educate, is the whole child. The kids that I get in my office, they're not worried about 2x minus y equals z. They might be worried about where they're going to get their next meal. Or they might be worried about they're homeless tonight. Or maybe, like one student came into my office and said, well, I just said goodbye to my mom this morning, and she said, yeah, Dad and I are going to get a divorce. Have a good day. And that's how they start their day.
Hmm.
These are real situations, and somehow it gets lost. And I think that we have to bring that back. I think the other part, and this might be me personally, is I believe in the student support service model that contains social workers, psychologists, counselors, and nurses that are part of our educational system. And I think when I look at the statistics, and I think I was corrected last night, I said we were 49th in all the states in the number of counselors that we have. Mm-hmm. They corrected me and said, no, you're 50th. Mm. Technology, I believe, is ranked 48th. I haven't been corrected on that yet. But I think those two areas, too, are some just that are necessary for us to consider when we're teaching our kids. So once again, the needs that I see in our area are equity and funding. We have communities that have high mobility where students are moving in and out, and you're still required to keep track of them, test them, and make sure that they reach standards, but there's so much inconsistency. And I think that the formula that we have for our schools is an outdated formula for the students that we have today. And I think we really have to explore that. So I'm hoping that as policy makers, we are going to really consider that and look into that. But once again, I value education so much, but I also see that there are students that we have that are suffering from apathy. They're not engaging. Mm-hmm. I see it in our when I go to visit the school boards and city council meetings and so on in my district. I see that they're really not engaged into that, and I try to encourage our leaders to bring students with you, bring them in, try to get them engaged into our system. Because I'm, once again, a product of the 1982 budget cuts that happened. And then when I went off into college, I struggled with the latter part of the 80s budget cuts. Then I went to a small school district that struggled through the early 90s budget cuts. And then living in Roseville or working in Roseville suffered from the latter part of the 90s budget cuts. Something's got to change with this. We can't keep moving in every 2 years wondering when the next deal is happening for schools. That's what I think is important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. I will honor the fact that we're supposed to be done at 9:30, and our GOP colleagues, I understand, have a caucus meeting immediately following this, so we want to make sure they get to their meeting in time. I am a very stubborn person, and so what we're going to do is we're going to continue this discussion at our next hearing, and so the members who have not had an opportunity yet, I do want to hear from them, and I think it's important that we do that as colleagues. Just so you know, that next our schedule for next week, we're going to plan on Tuesday to have a discussion around the broad issues of the achievement gap. We have invited folks from Rochester, Robbinsdale, so we wanted to get Greater Minnesota, Suburban, Twin Cities perspective. I understand Representative Riley will also be having hearings that day, and so we'll also have some urban core individuals testifying later in that day. We hope to have some interaction with the Department of Ed on this issue on that same day, and perhaps also engaging with a independent research group on this issue to help us frame this up. On Thursday, we're scheduling up a discussion on with SciMath around the STEM discipline fields. It was a terrific, I'm told, gathering yesterday at the Minnesota Science Museum. It didn't work with our schedule in the House. I know a number of our colleagues in the Senate were able to attend. Some of our staffers were there, felt it was very useful, very helpful, and I'm really excited about wanting this committee to really dig into these STEM issues and what they mean for us in terms of our standards, high standards in the state, but also how it relates to equity outcomes, so addressing the achievement gap in that regard. So that's what we have in store for next week. We will start our next meeting by picking up with you, Representative Ward, at 8 o'clock in the morning. Come prepared. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to correct one announcement. It is my understanding that we do not have caucus today at 9:30, so I don't want everybody running off there.
Freshmen do have caucus, and the GOP, I think, also does have a caucus. Final word here is that one of the things, and I'll repeat this, but one of the things I want to do, you notice us taking copious notes here. I actually want to catalog these issues for us, and my hope is that toward the end of session, as we near the deadline date, or perhaps even a little bit afterwards, that we can revisit these issues and do a review and ask ourselves, so how do we do in terms of covering these issues, discussing these issues? My guess is we're not going to be able to get to everything. Things take off, Representative Erickson, as you know, it gets awfully busy here. But we're all elected for 2 years, and I think that this will beg some opportunities for us to do some work in the interim, perhaps through work group settings, and it also sets us up for the next session. But I do want us to get into that practice of articulating what it is that we want to accomplish and then assessing how we're doing in that regard. So thank you so much for your attentiveness today, for your promptness today, and we'll see you all here next week on Tuesday. Meeting adjourned.